From a quarantined studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Among the many poor nations around the world that are especially vulnerable to the COVID-19 crisis, India, the second most populous nation in the world, has struggled with the competing problems of the coronavirus, mass poverty, and an authoritarian government. On March 24th, the right-wing Hindu fundamentalist government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced an abrupt lockdown of the entire nation for 3 weeks with no notice. Millions of migrant workers who live a hand-to-mouth existence in Indian cities were forced to choose between starvation or catching the deadly virus. Now the nation is witnessing a mass migration of migrants back to their villages that has thrown the nation into an even greater crisis. My guest is Francisco Bencosme. He is the Asia Advocacy Manager with Amnesty International. Welcome to the program, Francisco.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, explain what exactly Mr. Modi did. Obviously, he, like other heads of state, has had to respond to the spread of the coronavirus. Here in the United States, we've had these safer at home policies and orders that states have issued. But in India, there are people who don't even have homes.
Yeah, exactly. So as you mentioned at the top of your show, what Prime Minister Modi did was institute a 21-day lockdown with 4 hours of notice, which left a lot of migrants and low-wage workers really shocked and sort of nowhere to turn. So what you saw was an overwhelming response of people trying to get transportation back to their home villages, and in many cases having to walk thousands of kilometers of miles back to their home villages. What subsequently happened was that states then issued a lockdown, meaning that migrants weren't allowed to go from one state in India to another one. And then the government was then using police, in some cases, excessive use of force, arbitrary detention, use of torture or other ill punishments to enforce that lockdown, leaving many migrants who were trying to go back to their homes subjected to massive police force.
So the lockdown order that Modi put into place did not account for the fact that India has this massive workforce that has migrated from villages, from the rural parts of the country to the urban parts of the country looking for work. So when there's a lockdown, essentially businesses are closed. And so the very reason for their presence in cities becomes moot, and they have no source of income. Some of them, you know, may not even have bank accounts, right?
Exactly. And what we saw was that many of the services that they would normally go to, like shelter, sanitation, or food, were all shut down. So, for example, religious sites offer a lot of the shelter or food for many of these different communities, but all of a sudden were forced to close because of the lockdown. So they had no alternative but to try to make the long voyage back home.
So this is essentially the world's biggest lockdown right now in India, right? I mean, China is the world's most populous nation, but China somehow managed to contain the virus, as far as we know, to one province around, you know, where the city of Wuhan is located, and did not enforce a national lockdown. Why has the Modi government enforced a national lockdown?
I mean, it's too soon to say, but I think what makes India very unique is it's the first non-Western developing country with a democracy-style government that has instituted these policies. You saw for a long time, India was one of the large remaining countries that didn't institute any kind of response to coronavirus. And then all of a sudden, it massively and very much haphazardly and rushly instituted this national lockdown because I think they saw and were hearing about the potential implications of if they simply went at pace and then were too late to respond.
So the mass migration that now is taking place or has attempted to take place is the biggest since the 1947 Indian independence, when partition, as it's called, happened, when essentially India split into India and Pakistan, and masses of people from both sides of that border crossed over. And this is the biggest mass migration in that nation's history since 1947. Aside from ordering these migrants to stay in place, what has the Indian government done to care for them? How are they eating? I saw one video on Twitter where there were thousands of people separated because of the social distancing requirements. They were sitting inside chalk-drawn circles and they were being fed. And one of them, a man from the village of Bihar, just started crying. It was the first time he had been fed in 3 days.
Yeah, unfortunately, initially, a lot of the response was put on the state governments and sort of decentralized local response, and the onus was put on them. And as you know, a lot of the social safety net in India was not ready for this kind of shock. Even before coronavirus hit, it lagged from an economy that in a public health sector that needed much improvement. It was just starting to make improvements when it comes to sanitation. So to have this massive migration and low wage workers all of a sudden putting a massive demand on these safety nets, it really makes it untenable. And so what you see is, I mean, the Modi administration announced a relief package, but unfortunately, a lot of confusion still abounds on how that's going to be implemented.
Modi apparently apologized to the nation's poor for taking these steps.
Right. Unfortunately, an apology is not is not sufficient for people who are on the streets who need food, shelter, sanitation, who need some kind of assurances that things will go back to normal.
And then I understand that the Modi government has also announced a stimulus plan, similar to, you know, the kind of economic stimulus that many nations, including the U.S., have had to put in place to provide economic relief for its citizens. However, we're, you know, here in the U.S., our bill was $2.2 trillion. And in India, the economic stimulus plan measures $22.6 billion, much, much lower figure for a country that is far more populous. Of course, different cost of living. But still, this bill that apparently provides direct cash transfers and also food handouts, is this even close to adequate?
I think it's too soon to know. What's really important and what we've been really focusing on is for it to address and sort of put the migrant workers and low-paid workers are really at the forefront of those discussions, because it is those communities that will be impacted the most and the hardest by coronavirus and are most vulnerable because of the fact that they are on the streets in large congregations. And so they really should be at the center of any one of those stimulus packages, as opposed to, say, for example, large corporations or businesses.
What do we know about how the mass migration has impacted families? I mean, certainly there are large numbers of single men that leave their villages to come work in cities, but then there are whole families as well. Are you concerned that that families are being separated?
Yeah, absolutely. So not only family separation, but many families at home, the ones who were in the major cities were the only family provider. So you have a real potential for food starvation back in some of these villages or social unrest because many people will be wondering where their family members are. And there's a real potential for exploitation, which is why we've been calling on the Modi administration to really center their response on where it's most needed.
How important is it to understand that India's economy itself is incredibly vulnerable to such disruptions? A few years ago, when Modi first came into power, similarly to how he has abruptly announced this lockdown with, as you said, 4 hours notice, he announced this demonetization policy that essentially made large bills moot overnight, caused a huge run on banks, brought the country to a standstill. 93% of India's workforce, according to Amnesty, is employed in the informal sector. That's incredible, 93%. So when you have a complete national lockdown, how are people supposed to function, or even for that matter, access government benefits?
Exactly. And I think, you know, this is a crisis that has been going on for months. India shares a border with China. And, you know, India should have been preparing and setting in motion the kind of services in place before it announced a national lockdown. And unfortunately, you know, similar, as you said, both its economic policies, but also its social welfare policies are not built and in place for such a national lockdown. I think another area that we've also seen hasty announcements is in Jammu and Kashmir, where they still have, they don't have a full restoration of internet access. And that has made it really difficult for those living there to be able to get the access to information they desperately need.
Right. So, you know, one part of the country has been on lockdown for months, and that is Jammu and Kashmir. But also before this lockdown, just a few months before, India witnessed very serious levels of violence in various parts of the country over a citizenship law, the Citizenship Amendment Act, that essentially questioned the citizenship of, in particular, India's Muslim population. I understand now the Modi government is trying to focus in on a Muslim organization or group as the source of the coronavirus spread in the country. How important is the anti-Muslim agenda of the Modi government when we're looking at how it's dealing with the COVID-19 crisis?
I mean, unfortunately, what you've seen is the coronavirus amplify and create a cascading effects of all of the human rights issues that India was dealing with before. So as you mentioned, the Citizenship Amendment Act, the National Registration of Citizens, and the strong anti-Muslim xenophobia that was existing in the country, but was also being fed at the highest levels of the BJP government, are now amplified on social media, in our TV media, where you see things like hashtag Corona Jihad and sort of violence against Muslim communities being used as sort of a scapegoat for this virus.
As we see here in the United States, with some Christian fundamentalist groups offering snake oil cures, we're also seeing some Hindu fundamentalist groups that are affiliated with the Modi government doing the same thing and selling, you know, bogus cures and taking advantage of people's vulnerability in this time of crisis. How does India compare to its neighbors in South Asia? It's not clear whether India is doing enough testing. So far, there have been, of course, cases and deaths from the coronavirus, but the bar for testing is pretty high. You have to satisfy a number of criteria before you're allowed to get a test, which suggests that the number, true number of infections might be quite a bit higher. Is India doing any better than any of its neighbors?
I think it's both too soon to tell, but also India is in such a unique place given the size of its population, but also the density in which most of its population lives under. And so I think with the exception of maybe Bangladesh, India is really in a league of its own. And so I think we don't know how the story is going to end. What we do know is that there have been secondary implications from how they're conducting, you know, many of which we've already discussed. But, you know, until we see sustainment of the numbers either staying at the same levels or going down, then we don't really know how the long-term, you know, implications of its policies have been on dealing with the virus.
We were talking earlier about the internal migration, you know, with millions of migrant workers who've come from villages to urban areas now trying to return home. But what about those migrants who have come from other countries near the border, say with Nepal? I understand that there are hundreds of Nepalese that are stuck at the Indian border. Has India shut down its borders to foot traffic?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen those reports as well. From our understanding is that, you know, that it has shut off its borders. I think it actually did that before it instituted the national lockdown. Where we've seen that, you know, that's been a concern that's happened all around the world. Even in the United States, we've seen other countries prevent U.S. citizens from returning here. What's really important is for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to work with other governments in order to have repatriation of their citizens. And so it's really incumbent on the Modi government to do that.
Now, when you have this sort of mass migration, doesn't it undermine the very reason for the lockdown? Because the whole point was to avoid crowds, was to social, you know, was to enforce social distancing. The photographs and the videos of, you know, hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people trying to go back to their own country are often, you know, crowds and crowds of people. Some of them are wearing masks, but they're pretty tightly packed in there, which I imagine would only accelerate the spread of the disease, right?
Absolutely. I mean, what you're seeing is large groups in traveling together. What you're seeing is, you know, particularly over the this past weekend, people were, when the first national lockdown was announced, were packaging in forms of transportation, all of which, you know, violates social distance policy. If you see people living in fear from law enforcement and from government officials, that makes it less likely that the public is going to have the trust in order to get the effective response that they need to combat this virus.
How seriously vulnerable is India's healthcare system? I mean, here in the United States, we don't have a national healthcare system that covers everybody, but we're one of the very few industrialized nations that doesn't. What is India's healthcare system like, and is it capable of handling this crisis and, you know, in terms of medical supplies that are needed, hospital beds, etc.?
I think it's being really put to a test right now. I think, you know, for a long time, Indian's health sector was one that was soon to be a success story in that it was lifting lots of people out of poverty. But unfortunately, it lacked real sanitation concerns when it comes to how people wash their hands. There was a need for massive education on things on water quality, on sanitation and other forms of hygiene in the form of public health sector, because unfortunately, all of that is being exasperated while we speak, and it didn't really put the attention it deserved on low income, on people of lower caste, and on migrant populations, which we're seeing are being the most impacted.
What sort of lessons do you think need to be learned and that India needs to take? What is Amnesty recommending that India do? Because it's not as if this is a crisis that's just hitting one nation that can then turn to the international community for aid. This is hitting the entire world at once.
Yeah, so I think the lessons that Amnesty is focusing on with respect to India are, one is that the emphasis need to be on migrants and on low wage workers, those who are most vulnerable to be impacted by the, you know, a lockdown, but also by the impacts of coronavirus. And so if you focus on the most marginalized parts of society, then that will have dividends effects for the rest of society. Second is that any policies need to be non-discriminatory. So everything you're seeing right now on the media with respect to anti-Muslims is simply unacceptable. And there needs to be an inclusive response to the public health crisis.
Where can people find out more about the work that Amnesty is doing, and specifically on India and its response to the coronavirus?
So we would recommend folks to go to www.amnestyindia.org. All of our information, our latest press releases, and how we're sort of encouraging a human rights-centered focus to the public health crisis can be found there.
That's amnestyindia.org. Francisco, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Francisco Ben-Cosme. He is the Asia Advocacy Manager with Amnesty International. We've been discussing how India and Narendra Modi's government has responded to the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.